This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 203.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Generation UCAN, the revolutionary new way for runners to fuel. UCAN keeps your blood sugar stable and allows your body to burn fat. Generation UCAN, their sugar and then their science. Use the promo code MTATINA to save 15% off of your order. When you go to generationucan.com, use the code MTATINA. Hello and welcome to the MTA podcast, where it's all about helping you conquer the marathon and change your life. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we talk with fellow podcaster and elite runner Tina Muir about reaching a lifelong dream in her running and the ups and downs along the journey. You'll also hear about how she deals with negative thoughts in the marathon and her down-to-earth look at building self-confidence. And to get more help running your first marathon or a faster marathon or whatever your next running goal is, find out how to train with us and our awesome online community when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So Angie, just going to check in on you here. How's the habit formation going? Still keeping it up, aren't you?
The habit maintenance, you mean? Yes, I'm happy to report that even though it is the end of January going into the month of February, that I'm still staying consistent with the goals that I set for myself in spite of the busy month that it's been. And I was also calculating the other day that, you know, cross training is a thing that we talk about a lot, that I've substitute taught 9 yoga classes this month. So it feels like I've almost done more yoga this month than running.
Well, that's good because I know you love it. And we've talked about it on the show quite a bit. And in fact, you have put together a Yoga for Runners video that's inside the academy as part of our core strengthening, cross training stuff that's in there that we have for members. So if you're interested in incorporating yoga into your routine, definitely check into that. So here are a few letters from the mailbag, the virtual mailbag.
That's right. Yes, Steven writes to say, recently discovered your podcast and have really been enjoying them. We live in a little community in outback Australia called Dungog, with not many people but plenty of cows and kangaroos. We listen to your podcast while we sit outside in the afternoon heat and take turns swatting massive horseflies when they try to bite us.
Yeah, I've heard of Dungog.
No, you haven't.
Said no one ever. Well, that's cool.
Sounds like you've got an intense summer with the heat and massive horseflies going on, but glad our podcast can make it a little better.
Podcasts really do reach the four corners of the earth, you know?
I guess so.
Well, thank you, Stephen, for the note, and hello, all of our Australian listeners.
That's right. This next note comes from Mohsin. He says, I just ran the Dubai Marathon. I started slow, ran solid in the middle, and hung on for dear life towards the end. Training didn't go exactly as planned, so I'm pretty chuffed with a 6-minute PB for my first and only other marathon. Thanks for all the support. This group has been very beneficial and motivational during my training.
Awesome. Well, that describes how a lot of marathons are, you know. You hang on for dear life at the end.
Right, exactly.
So thanks for keeping it real. And congrats, Mohsin, on running the Dubai Marathon.
This next note comes from Tim. He says, hi, Angie and Trevor. I loved episode number 202, especially when you were talking about masters runners and people saying they were too old to keep running. You were kind of reading my mail. I'm 54 years old. My knees and IT band hurt more often than they used to after a run. Most days, my times are slower than I'd like, and yet every so often, I surprise myself. When you were talking about the 70-year-old training for their marathon, my pace actually increased because if they can do it, so can I. I'm not sure I have the time to commit to a full right now, but I can still push myself to run and to run well. Thanks for inspiring me.
Well, I'm glad it helped, Tim. Keep up the good work. You do have what it takes. No matter what age a person is, they can do this thing called running a marathon.
That's right.
We've seen it with our own eyes.
And this last note comes from iTunes, and this was a recent comment that someone left us. It says, thanks so much, Angie and Trevor. I've listened to every single episode since they launched, and it's been fun to see them grow as podcasters. Thanks to them, I ran my first marathon in 2013, and I've completed 14 marathons since then. Additionally, it was also a great inspiration to finally launch my own running podcast in Spanish. Keep up the great work, and thanks for providing so much great content. This is the only podcast I've listened to for over 6 years.
Wow. And we don't know the person's actual name, because when you leave a review in iTunes, a lot of times you can just set up a nickname or type in anything. But that is pretty amazing that he's been listening to us, or she has been listening to us, we don't know, since we began 6 years ago. And they've gone from one marathon to 14 marathons under their belt. That's a very remarkable journey this person's been on, and it's definitely why we do what we do.
That's right, and it's really neat they're able to share their running journey on their running podcast in Spanish as well.
Yeah, so send us a link to your podcast in Spanish, and we will post it on our website. We'd love to check it out. And Angie can be a guest on your show since she's learning Spanish, right, Angie?
You can talk to me like you would talk to a two-year-old.
Okay, she's at the two-year-old level.
Yes, unfortunately, still. But if you enjoy this podcast, make sure you go over to iTunes and rate us and leave a comment if you'd like.
All right, well, we're going to get into our interview with Tina Muir. She's a sub-240 marathoner, a Saucony-sponsored runner, blogger, and the host of the Run to the Top podcast. And as you'll hear, she's originally from Great Britain and lives in the United States. In fact, lives in the state of Kentucky, one state over from where we live right now. We had a fun conversation with Tina. She's getting to be a good friend, even though we've never met her in person. She's always fun to talk to, and I hope that this will be inspiring to you and informative. Let's go ahead and get into our conversation with Tina right now.
Well on my way, well on my way.
All right, we're on the podcast now with Tina Muir. Tina, it's great to have you back on the MTA podcast. How have you been? We haven't talked to you in like a couple of years, I think.
I know. I have spoken to you guys once or twice, maybe through email. But yeah, not in person though. But yeah, things are going well.
I think you were about to get married last time we had you on the show.
Oh, yes. See, now that feels like a distant memory, getting married. but yeah, I did get married summer of 2015. That was a very special moment. And we actually put running into it quite a lot. We had one of our things we did was rather than people having their table numbers being, on a list, you picked up a bib, and your bib was your like last name.
Oh, nice.
And it said run to me, which was our hashtag, and it said the Pacucci Classic, which is the name of my husband. And so we really went all out, and that was kind of fun. Like people like pinned them to their dresses and stuff. So we brought running into it in some fun ways. So it was good.
I saw a picture of you and Steve running along the beach, and you had a wedding dress on.
Yeah, and actually that looks really staged, but it wasn't at all. Like that was literally, we were running, the sunset was going really quickly, and we had our photographer following us along. And just running from place to place, and we were literally sprinting like that. That photo that you're referring to on my blog, I think it wasn't set up. It looks like it was, but we were literally running at that moment. And the photographer, bless his heart, he's probably 250 pounds. He was like wheezing by the end, like running around. Me and Steve just ran along in our wedding outfit, but we are actually fine, and he was wheezing. So, but yeah, it was fun.
Did you guys wear running shoes?
We did in the evening, actually. I had Saucony give us both a pair of Kinvaras in our wedding colors, so that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
So is Steve still your coach?
He is still my coach. We haven't had any big arguments to change that yet. Although sometimes I think he probably would rather get rid of me and be able to pass me off to someone else when I wake him up in the middle of the night with a question about running.
But, he's a little too accessible, huh?
Yeah, I know. That's, I think, the problem. He keeps saying that it's like I store up all my questions about running until we're in bed. Mm-hmm. And then I start asking them, and he's like, why are you asking me this now? So, yeah, it's definitely bad for him in some ways, but good for me.
So other than getting married, what was the other big thing that might have went on in the last couple of years for you?
Oh, I just accomplished my number one running goal. It was no big deal.
No big deal.
Do tell, please.
Yeah, so 2016 was a huge year for me, which was kind of funny at the end of the year when everyone was kind of saying 2016 was the worst. I can't wait for this year to be over. And I was kind of like, well, actually, my running wise, I had a good year. So But yeah, so basically from when I was age 14, and I might have even talked about it when I came on the show last, that I'd had this dream of representing Great Britain in a world championship. It'd always been my dream, and it was that thing, that carrot that I dangled in front of me on those days where you didn't want to get out the door, or the moments when you were in a workout and you were thinking, oh, why am I doing this? Right. I always said to myself, like, GB, or I just had this vision of holding this, like, jersey in my hand, knowing that I'd earned it. And, yeah, so this last year it happened. It was a big drama building up to it, because Great Britain only selects their team for these kind of events 3 weeks before.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so wow. That was very stressful in the, 2 months before, because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know, because if I didn't do it, it was a half marathon. So it wasn't like it was a 5K where you could just pick another one.
Right.
So I didn't know if I was going to do that or London Marathon. I ended up doing both. And then I wasn't selected. And they called me that 3 weeks before. I wasn't selected. And I felt like devastated. I was,
wow.
You know, that kind of ugly, well, Trevor, you might not know this, but Angie, you probably know that kind of ugly crying you do where you're like spitting essentially and you're like, like you can't get your words out because you're just so like emotional. That's exactly what I was doing. I didn't think I was going to make it. But then in my heart, I just had this feeling that I was going to go. I don't know why, but I just had a feeling. And then sure enough, the week of, on the Wednesday, when the race was on Saturday, they called me and said, will you come and run for us? And I was like,
wow.
Okay. So I came, and it was kind of nice, actually, because I went over there and I had no pressure, because it was kind of like, no one was expecting me to be there.
Yes.
Ended up finishing third British runner out of five and 49th overall in the World Championship. And I was happy enough with that, especially as, the day they called me, I just finished a hard workout.
Oh, my goodness.
I was happy with that. But then they called me up again and offered me the European Championships as well. So I got to do it twice within 3 months. So that was pretty cool. So, and I still got to run the London Marathon in between as well. So it was a good year.
What a huge year. Congratulations. That's amazing.
So tell us about that race. First of all, tell us about how big is this event and how important is it to runners? And then what was it like for you to toe the line?
Yeah, I mean, it was the biggest. I'd never heard of the World Half Marathon Championships before. Great Britain actually emailed me, I think maybe in December or January, saying, would you like to be considered? And I was like, what is this thing? So I emailed them back and they said, well, you didn't run the trials. And I said, well, I didn't even know this event existed, so
right.
Of course I didn't run the trials. So I didn't know it existed. It's not a huge, obviously it's not the level of the Olympics, it's not the level of even one of the track world championships, but it's still world championship. Mo Farah ran in it for Great Britain, which in itself was pretty cool, being around him and just seeing what he's actually like. And, we'd be sitting at a table, like a group of us, and, I'm sitting next to Mo, and then, he stands up and immediately like 20 people like flock to him for his autograph, and these are other elite runners.
Wow.
And everyone is just like, you can tell he's just the celebrity. So that was pretty cool. And for me, it was nice standing on the start line, knowing that I'd earned it and here was my chance and I could get to enjoy it. And I had no pressure. That was the nice thing. I like being like the dark horse. And that's kind of what I was, because no one expected anything of me. And just running along, hearing people go GB or come on Great Britain was just such a special moment for me. And in every photo there is of me of that race, I'm like smiling ear to ear, to the point where when I was at the London Marathon a few months later, people were like, did you actually run hard in that race? Because you're just smiling. You look like you're just having fun. And I was like, I did run hard. Thank you. But it was just such a special moment that I knew that there was only one time in my life I was going to get to do that. And as I'd wanted it for 14 years, that was just, I just soaked up every bit I could.
How many different countries were represented?
I'm not sure. I think about I want to say 35, but I'm not sure, actually. You know, most of the countries that I have seen in the world were there. US did have a good presence. It was funny, actually, though, with the US team. When I first got there, Great Britain is very... the way running is over there is a little more, like, separate. Like, you don't really, like, talk to many other people that run for Great Britain, and you kind of keep your training very close to you. And so when I got there, I didn't really know anyone, and partly because I live in the US, but I didn't really know any of them. So, and I see all the US people sitting there in a group, and I kind of almost wanted to be like, can I come sit with you? Because I like knew some of them.
I'm like, from Kentucky. Can I sit with you?
Yeah. So, it was funny, but, there was a lot of good countries there, and, different people, different levels of experience there to kind of make it a rounded event.
What was your finish time?
I ran 1:15:10. So that was about 2 minutes off my PR, but the weather that day was insane. It was so windy. And I would encourage people to watch the replay of or the highlights of the men's race, because it shows how windy it was. There's one point they show the... I think it was about a mile to go in the men's race, and you see them run past a road, and you see a wind gust come across them, and you see these elite men just kind of like blow to the side and then come back again. It was windy, it was raining, it was howling, it was horrible. So I was happy with that.
Well, those guys only weigh like 100 pounds. So.
Yeah, it's really funny to watch, because you hear people say like, oh, you know, a stiff wind could blow you over. Well, you literally see these men getting blown.
So what kind of pace does one have to run to hit a 1:15 half marathon?
I think that's about 5:45 per mile, roughly. Yeah, I think that is about right.
So any tips you can share on pacing? Do you have to really kind of hold yourself back in the beginning because you're so excited? And
I mean, for me that day, I knew I wanted to, because I knew the weather was bad, and I knew that because the wind was going to be blowing at us, it was better to be safe. I kind of held back a lot anyway, but yeah, I mean, I think with any race, any situation, you have to be careful not to go out too fast. And you know, it's all relative, obviously. It doesn't matter what speed you are, you're always going to have that urge to go out too fast. But I tend to remind myself that it's better to be passing than be passed. So if I can kind of check my ego a bit and hold back, then towards the end, I'm going to be the one passing people and gaining confidence, rather than the one being passed who feels like everyone is passing them, and it just damages your confidence. So try and just remind myself of that.
So getting passed damages your confidence. Can you maybe elaborate on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we all know the feeling. I mean, I've definitely had it where if you're running along, you know, you're feeling you're really struggling and you're just not feeling good. And then if someone passes you, just like absolutely like blows by you really fast, that makes you feel like, oh God, am I going that slow? Like, because you feel like you've slowed down that much that they just are passing you like you're standing still. And even if they're, you know, they are just feeling amazing and they've been holding back, it still makes you feel very self-conscious that, you know, you've done something wrong. And it just reinforces that feeling inside of you that you are struggling. And I definitely find that the all levels, it doesn't matter who you are, that tends to be the case. And you know, it's just not a good feeling. And whereas if you are that person passing people, every person you pass, you're like, yeah. So I don't know, it's just what makes you want more of that.
And then they go into a mental tailspin while you're, you're inflicting psychological damage on every person you pass.
It's not a very nice thing to do, is it? Sounding like a horrible person. I enjoy passing people.
You should like pump your fist as you're going by. Get in their head a little bit.
What not to do. And then that'd be my luck. They'd pass me later, you know. Like, yeah, oh, okay.
Yeah. You'd be like, suck it.
Yeah, I have done that a few times where I've passed people, you know, with like a mile to go. and then coming down the straightaway, they pass me back, and I'm like, ah, too confident.
Again.
Yeah. All right. So, any tips on dealing with like the negative headspace that we can get in as runners?
Yeah, actually, this is something that I really feel quite passionately about, because I feel like most elite runners aren't going to tell you that they struggle. But I don't mind sharing that not only I struggle in races, but I also have that same internal battle that a lot of us have of like, you know, where that voice in your head is just like, I can't do this. I'm going to stop. It's too hard. I'm just going to stop. And I used to actually be very kind of aggressive back to myself, kind of have an argument in my head of like, I can't do this. Yes, you can. I can't. Yes, you can. Whereas now I've kind of transitioned, and I would encourage people, especially the women listening, to be kind to yourself. And rather than saying like, what are you doing? You're worthless. You're useless. Of course you can't hold this pace. You're so bad. Like the way that we usually are, like cruel to ourselves. Instead, imagine you're talking to like your best friend or your daughter or a sister or, you know, someone close to you and encourage. And I find that helps so much during a race. If you're able to say like, it's okay. All right. This is a tough part, but you're going to get through this tough part and you're going to be fine. And then you're going to feel good again. And I just find being supportive and encouraging helps a lot. So I like to imagine myself. I imagine Steve is riding alongside of me and he's saying what he would be saying, like, it's okay, babe, keep going. You're doing great. So I find that helps a lot. Another thing I did in my last marathon, which I found really helpful, was I imagined, I called it mental bottles. So rather than every time you take on fuel, I would say, okay, when I pick up this next fuel or take my next fuel, I'm going to dedicate these miles to this person. So, and I strategically did it in a way that was significant. So for example, at mile 15, I had my my mental coach, my sports psychologist. I knew that around mile 15 would be a time I would be kind of doubting myself and thinking, you know, this is hard, I've got such a long way to go. So I dedicated miles 15 to 18 to her. And then mile 18 was where, okay, my form is going to start breaking down. But I did my strength training with my strength coach. So the next 3 miles are dedicated to him. And then mile 20 was my husband because he's the one that, you know, obviously meant the most to me. And so, you know, if I could make it through these last few miles, then, you know, that's all the time he's put into me. So I find that helps if you dedicate things to people and kind of say, I'm just going to do these few miles for this person and the time they dedicated to me. So maybe if you have, you know, a spouse who drove you to your long run every week, or, you know, dropped off bottles for you or whatever. So you dedicate different ones to different people. And I find that helps a lot because it's only a few miles as well. So you can say, you know, I'm going to do this for this person because they were there for me during my training and that's what I can do for them. Yeah. And it just takes it away from you in this like pity party that we tend to throw ourselves and puts it onto someone else and something bigger than yourself.
Yeah, that's good. I'm wondering too, when you were pursuing this lifelong running dream that you had to represent Great Britain, what was the lowest point during that process where maybe you felt like maybe this will never happen and you just were really...
Probably the part where she got the
rejection.
And
yeah, the spitting crying.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that looks like. Could you demonstrate?
I probably could. I cry pretty easily. You could knock it out of me pretty easy. Yeah, I mean, when I got that phone call, that was definitely it, because I had flown, I think I did the New Orleans 10K, I think it was the end of January. Great Britain had said to me, you need to prove you're in shape. So I had looked all over the US for a race, couldn't really find anything, but this New Orleans 10K was there, went down there. There was no one for me to race, but I just went hard by myself, finished second overall, men and women.
Wow.
And just gave it my all. And, you know, they kind of hinted to me that that was enough, but they wouldn't say it. So then I'd become so convinced that I'd got the place. You know, I'd spent hours looking through all the other people they must be considering, what they'd been doing. And I was like, okay, I think I'm in. And then, you know, receiving the phone call, like I said, all along, I'd kind of had this gut feeling that it was going to happen. So when that phone call came, it was like the words weren't making any sense. Like, what do you mean I'm not selected? So right. Yeah, that moment it was kind of like, well, how am I ever going to do this if I can't break through? And I kind of had a thing of thinking that they would always pick favorites, and I was like, well, of course they didn't take me. I'm not one of the favorites. So I think that was definitely that moment. And then there'd been tons of moments along the years where I've just thought, I'm never going to be able to do this. And especially living in the US, I kind of thought they had a thing against me. Well, she's gone now, so she doesn't deserve to be over here. So.
So after you were able to have such a big year in 2016, coming into this year, did you ever feel like you've kind of achieved such a big goal and the what's next? You know, kind of sometimes there's a little bit of a letdown after you accomplish something really big, even though you're super excited. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, I worked so hard all that time for that. You know, what's next kind of thing?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I actually, I went through that a bit later that summer. So I did that World Half, and then 5 weeks later ran the London Marathon, smashed my PR by 4 minutes, broke 2:40 for the first time, around 2:37. So that was huge. And that was like, you know, the breakthrough I'd always wanted. And then I did worry for a while. I was like, you know, am I gonna just have no motivation anymore? And what am I gonna do? And, you know, I did have a few races, I will say, like local races, but still had races where I was out running and I'd be out there like, do I even want this anymore? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure, and I'd finish and I'd say to Steve, like, I don't think I want to run anymore. And he's like, yes, you do. Like, it's not that. And then sure enough, yeah, the next race I would be fine. But yeah, there was definitely some of that moment and kind of reframing things of what I wanted to accomplish moving forward, especially as that biggest one was done. And yeah, I will say that it kind of did change things. But so far, I haven't really experienced the, you know, what am I going to do thing, because I still have some things I want to do in the other events. But one good thing I do feel like is that I feel like I've done myself proud. So if I didn't accomplish anything else, I would be happy enough. So it's nice to not have the pressure anymore of like trying to prove yourself. Because I think as runners, we always get in this stage of kind of, we're trying to prove that we're worthy, or it's mostly, as much as we pretend it's for other people, it's what we think we are good enough. I think that year was enough to show me that I'm good enough, and I've come to terms with that, which has been nice to not have that pressure of I have to do this in my next race because I've done the things I wanted to do. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, you spoke to kind of a runner's that goal they always have, you know, they want a new PR or they're driving towards something. So how do you balance staying motivated, keep working towards your goals, but feeling like you are enough and that, you know, your self-esteem is not dependent on your goals? Because I think a lot of people, you know, they feel like if they don't keep these high goals in front of themselves, like they're giving up on their potential, but then sometimes they're not satisfied with themselves along the way.
Yeah, I think that's actually something I've really learned over the last like 6 months, in exactly what you said about, you know, people feel like they have to have this huge goal and it has to be this driving force that gets you out of bed every day. And like I mentioned, I did use it, but I've actually found that since it's actually better to not have a huge goal and not have that pressure on you. Because say, for example, you say, okay, like for me, I went to California International Marathon thinking, okay, this is a downhill marathon. I'm going to smash my time. I'm going to run so well. And I didn't take into account that CIM actually has rolling hills. It's not just one big downhill. Right. And that kind of beat me up. Or like, let's say you pick Chicago Marathon and you're like, I want to run Chicago because it's flat and fast, but then the weather's bad. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's really hard to readjust your goal if you are just obsessed with your goal, but then, you know, the conditions aren't looking good, or let's say you get a little injury where you have to reassess. So I actually find it's better to just, you know, obviously you have times you'd like to run, but kind of let your body tell you what it's ready for. And then as long as you do your best, the result will take care of itself. And actually, I had Jared Ward on the podcast I had host lately, and he was talking about the same thing about how, you know, all we want to really do is be our best. And, you know, too often we get sucked into thinking, well, if I could only accomplish this, then I'll be happy and then I'll be a changed person and I can retire. But he said, you know, even after the Olympics, he was lying in bed thinking he would be a different person, but he wasn't. He was the same.
Right.
And so that really kind of put it in perspective that, you know, you it's nice to have goals, but it's not going to, like you said, define who you are. And no matter what, your family is going to love you regardless of what time you run. And the people that matter to you, you know, they're not going to notice the difference between 10 minutes in a marathon or,
right.
you know, a minute in a 5K. To them, you're just running and you're doing it and you're proud. They're proud of you for doing it. So I think that's the good thing, that reminding yourself that it's just you and your internal pressure that's making you feel that way rather than actually anyone else forcing you to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you can run a marathon, everybody in your life is going to think that you're superhuman.
Yeah, exactly. I have a funny story.
Just finishing
story
the marathon.
That. The first marathon I did at Philadelphia, I remember I ran 2:49, which I was devastated with, which I know sounds completely spoiled.
Oh, I would be devastated with that time too.
Yeah, wow. Right.
That's what, so many people say to me, they're like, really? But I was devastated. I was so upset because I thought I was going to run under 2:40. And I remember going into LaSalle, where I was doing my MBA, the next day, and people kept coming up to me and they'd be like, oh, did you run the marathon yesterday? And I said, yeah. And before I could get my butt out, they would be like, oh, congratulations. And then they'd turn around and walk away. And I kind of was like, yeah, but you didn't hear how bad I did. But to them, it didn't matter. Like, the fact that you ran a marathon is incredible. And it is. But we get so like wrapped up in our own thing of like, I have to PR or I have to be the best. And I think a big part of that is obviously we're surrounded by this social media world that always shows of this success of people, and people don't want to portray the bad stuff. But I think it's also just us, you know, expecting too much of ourselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, we see the best selves of people, and mm-hmm. then we see the worst parts of ourselves, and we try mm-hmm. to mesh those, and there's a big disconnect there if we're not careful and realize that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something that I try and remind people often, that, you know, what you see on social media is only part of what is actually going on. So don't be so hard on yourself. Instead, encourage yourself.
And you kind of take the opposite direction on your blog, because you want to be honest and transparent. So there's quite a few pictures over there of you just like chowing down on ice cream sandwiches, muffins, delicious looking things.
It's funny, actually, people often say to me the two things they associate with me are running and sugar, like eating sweets. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's exactly what I wanted to bring up, was the nutrition and sugar and any changes to your nutrition in recent years. I think last time we talked to you, you talked about cutting out processed foods and trying to mm-hmm. eat organic and grass-fed beef. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm still trying to eat well as much as I can and eat as close to the ground as I can. But yeah, since I last talked to you, I have completely like revamped my diet. I actually went a little bit too far, so this will be interesting. I'm not sure how many of your listeners have tried this, but I know there is a lot of people out there trying the high-fat, high-protein diet and side of things. And yeah, I did make the transition over to that about a year ago, so it was before both of my big races. So I can say, you know, I was fine with it. So I just changed the percentage of food. I wouldn't say I was low carb by any means, but let's just say I wasn't chowing down on pasta every night. Instead, I was trying to eat, you know, sweet potatoes, squash, trying to make my food during the day be like fully not plant-based, but like fruits, vegetables, and meat and protein, I guess. So I had a lot more animal products, a lot of coconut, you know, coconut butter, coconut flakes, coconut everything. But I tried to make my meals during the day be kind of almost paleo, I guess. And then in the evening, I would eat as normal, but trying to make more of those sauces be unprocessed. Mm-hmm. And I found actually, yeah, I felt some, I looked leaner, I felt better, I had more energy. Everything was great. I did go a little bit too far in the summer. So I would say to anyone listening who's considering it, it's great for marathon, you know, ultra marathon and beyond. But when I was doing the shorter 5K, 10K training, it was, you need those carbs. You need that quick source of fuel.
So you were kind of like feeling yourself bonk?
Yeah, I had a few races where I just felt like my legs couldn't go. Like I felt like how you would feel had you bonked in a marathon. It was kind of that same feeling. Very flat, very just felt dead really. Mm. And I think that was because I cut the carbs just weren't high enough to sustain it. I think with the marathon your body can kind of get used to that fat burning a little bit more, but in the shorter stuff you just can't really rely on it. And it wasn't so much a 5K. I could get away with it in a 5K, but it was the 5 miles to 10 mile distance that I got in trouble.
So. And you also switched over to Generation UCAN, right?
Yes.
What were you doing before?
Before I was using gels. I would take 3 gels and just take it with water a few times during a marathon. But yeah, I like UCAN a lot better.
So what turned you on to UCAN?
I think I'd heard of quite a few people using it, and I was curious about it. But then I did try it for Chicago 2014 when I did that marathon. And actually that was the only thing about that marathon that actually went well. So I knew it was a good choice even back then. But, then I kind of went back to the power bar gels. But then I just decided with CIM and especially with these diet changes and feeling so much better that I thought UCAN would be worth trying again. And it really, really worked. Like I was, to be honest, I was very scared going into California International Marathon because I was just relying on UCAN and I'd never done a race without any gels. And here I was going for it. And most other elite runners have some kind of gel. But it worked. I did not feel any like bonking. I did not feel any, you know, any fueling issues. It went down nicely. I took it. My stomach was fine. And that's always a concern for runners. Yes. The only other thing I used was a run gum at mile 20. But that wasn't even for the physical side. That was just, you know, mentally I needed some kind of wake me up, and by that time my coffee was long gone. So but physically, yeah. I it was great using the UCAN, and I'll be using that moving forward. I loved it.
How often did you take it?
I had a little bit every 5K, but I think I could have got away with doing a little bit more of it or a deeper concentration of it every 10K if I needed to, and I might try that next time around. But as I was fortunate enough to have the Elite bottles, I thought I might as well take the opportunity to do that and have it every 5K.
And this would be a good time to thank Generation UCAN for sponsoring this episode. Just like Tina said, it works great and we love it. We've been using it for a few years now.
Yes, I'm very thankful to have found it. It's been a great source of reliable fueling for me and I wouldn't use anything else.
It's a super starch, which is a slow-release carbohydrate source. And they've put together a 15% off deal if you use the code MTATINA. That's T-I-N-A. Just go to generationyoucan.com and use the code MTATINA.
We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Sunbasket. Now, we all know that it's a challenge to eat healthy, and sometimes it seems like there's always an excuse for not eating healthy. You don't have a personal nutritionist, or you don't have access to the right ingredients. You're too tired to plan and shop and cook. I mean, I think I've felt all of those things at one point or another. Well, your body doesn't understand excuses, and that's why Sunbasket got rid of them. Sunbasket makes it easy to cook delicious, seasonal, nutritious meals in your kitchen in just 30 minutes or less. It's healthy cooking made easy. You'll get organic, non-GMO ingredients from the best farms and fishermen sent directly to your door. You can choose from paleo, gluten-free, and vegetarian options. And it's created by an award-winning chef and approved by nutritionists. Each Sunbasket meal comes with pre-measured fresh ingredients and easy-to-follow directions. And it's delicious. And all of their packaging is recyclable, so it's good for the environment. You can go to sunbasket.com/marathon today and get your first 3 meals free.
It's a great deal. Once again, that's sunbasket.com/marathon. So I guess one final question. You accomplished your biggest dream in representing Great Britain, and it's awesome. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other plans or goals that you're working on?
Well, actually, we're trying to figure that out. I'm hoping by the time this goes live, I do know which race I'm doing, because we were looking at Boston, but I did have a little minor blip with an issue in my foot, and so we've decided that it's just a bit too close, especially as Boston is such a, you know, you have to prepare for it with the hills, and you have to be really ready for Boston. And, you know, I could race Boston not going for a PR and not, you know, not being in great shape, and that would be fine. But I think at this point we want to have one more go. Like Steve said, I'm very close to making a huge jump. And so we want to go for one that I really can. So we're hoping it's going to be Gold Coast Marathon in Australia. That is in July. And that's also where the Commonwealth Games are in 2018. So that would be a good time for me to learn from my California International lesson of not looking at the course well enough and get to practice that course. So if I could run for England in that, then I could do it. But yeah, that's a flat course, it's a fast course, it's along the coast, it's supposed to be amazing. So hoping for that one, but we haven't quite 100% decided yet. So
when you said that Steve said you're almost ready to make your next big jump, what do you mean by that?
Well, we going into California International, when we thought it was, because it does get put out as a downhill marathon, and it is a downhill marathon, a net downhill, but it's just got a lot of rolling hills, and I wasn't prepared for that. So we thought going in that I was ready for 2:33 to 2:34, and I ran a 2:36. So not far off, but we think, you know, a 2:33 would put me in the next, like, level, I guess. That would be the next, like, category of elite runner. So we think hopefully in this next marathon I could run a 2:33-ish. So
you're being really strategic about which one you pick and then your training going up to it. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also Steve is really into, and he recommends this for everyone, going back to do speed work after each marathon. So doing some track workouts, doing 5K, 10K training, even if it's only for a month or so, so that you have that speed that can help you in the marathon. So that gives me time to go back to that speed stuff, as much as I hate it while we're doing it. It is good for me, and it definitely can help everyone, especially if you've become a bit stale. And I think that's a big part of why I've PR'd in every marathon, because we keep going back to that speed work.
Nice. So you do the speed work after your race?
Yeah, like it will be coming up. So it would be before I go into the next marathon training cycle. So, you know, let's say you were running Chicago. It would be good for you to do a speed segment in, you know, April, May, and then you take, you know, a week or so off, and then you start building up for Chicago.
So
not exactly before, but in the region of when your race is.
When you ran the 10K in New Orleans, was that the Rock and Roll Marathon series?
Yeah.
And that was last year?
Yeah, it was. That's a really fun race. I definitely would recommend that for anyone. And the half marathon course looked actually really fast. So I don't know. Have you guys done that one before?
I was there last year. I did the marathon and the year before.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Oh, see, we could have, I know, could have not been 2 years. It could have been less than a year, and we met face to face.
Exactly.
We were down there the year that Mo Farah won the half marathon. I don't remember what year that was, but And then he goes on the local television channel, and they interviewed him.
Oh, well, that was that.
Yeah, so and they had no idea who he was, and the lady's like, so you won? He's like, yes. He's like, have you run before?
It's like, oh.
And the Olympics, we just had the Olympics, you know, and it's like, yes, of course he's run before.
I think I remember seeing that. Yeah, they asked him something really stupid, didn't they? About, is this your first half marathon or something? Is this, I can't remember. Yeah, I remember that being a big deal when it happened. I didn't realize that was that race, though. That's funny. Oh, dear. Yeah, that must have been bad, especially if it happened now. That would be even worse because he's just like a household name.
Exactly.
Especially for me being from Britain, yeah. But I think worldwide.
He's also an internet meme.
Yeah.
The exuberant Mo Farah victory.
Yeah. I want to come up with some kind of, I'm seeing more and more people doing something that they do every time now. So
right.
I need to think.
You could have a trademark. Yeah. Mm. A Tina move.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not that creative with stuff like that. Actually, one funny story. Since I last talked to you, I broke tape the first time at the Army 10 mile. And
awesome.
When I was coming down the straightaway, I was actually thinking to myself, oh, how do I hold up my arms? Do I make fists? Do I like put my hands up? Do I... You know, and I was literally going down the straightaway, like, what do I do with my arms? Because like I'd never won a race like that, and I'd never thought about it. And I was like, what do other people do? And then it just all happened too quickly that I didn't even have a chance to like actually decide. But yeah, it was funny going into that moment thinking like, what do I do with my arms? Like, because you know, you see people raise them like straight up. Some people raise them out. Some people make fists. Some people punch the air. So I need to get my game on to prepare for that next time.
So the photographs had you looking confused.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Thankfully, I was smiling at least. But yeah,
smile is always good.
it was a funny moment thinking. And people were like, what do you mean you were thinking about that when you were coming down the straightaway? And I was like, well, it was only for like, you know, half a second that it actually was like going through my head. But
I thought it would be intuitive just to raise your arms. To break the tape, because that's what
Do you like make a fist, or do you like put them out straight? What do you do?
Throw up gang signs, maybe.
Yeah, there you go. See, that's why you need a trademark, because then you just know what you're going to do.
Exactly.
There you go. You need to think about that if you ever win a race. To be practice in the mirror.
Right. Exactly.
So, if people want to find you online and what you're up to, where would they go?
Well, I would say just to Google me first is probably the easiest way. But my website is tinamuir.com. My last name is spelled M-U-I-R.
Like John
Muir. Husband's name, yes, like John Muir. Yep. My husband's name is Pacucci. So I did not take his name when I got married because I figured it would be too difficult for people to try and find me.
I wasn't even sure how to pronounce it.
Yeah, no one is. You should hear the phone calls we get when people call up asking for him. It's pretty funny to hear how many ways people can hack that name. but yeah, so tinamuir.com. I'm at Tina Muir for Twitter. I have a athlete page on Facebook, and Instagram is tinamuir88. And then I'd love if people would check out the podcast Run to the Top. Obviously I want people to keep listening to MTA, but if you have some extra time, it'd be great to hear what you think.
We'll have links to all of those places over on our website along with the show notes this episode, and yeah, definitely check out Run to the Top podcast. So Tina, thanks for being on the show, and congrats on all your success, and we look forward to seeing what you're going to be able to do next.
Yeah, you too, and hopefully it's not this long again, and hopefully if we're in the same damn race at some point, we'll figure that out ahead of time now.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you're like, oh yeah, you were there too. So, hopefully that won't happen. Although I should have thought about that, because you guys go to quite a lot of the big races, don't you? Well, Andy, you do.
Well, yeah, it depends on the year. We get to a fair amount of them now.
We entered the lottery for New York City this year. We did Berlin last year, so we're thinking about doing like one international marathon a year.
What did you think of Berlin?
I loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome. They put on a you know, definitely a world-class event there. And just, we had a lot of fun touring around as well. Just Germany was really neat. Great.
I've had a lot of good things about that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope to do it someday. Okay, well, have a good rest of your day, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Sounds good. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Well, we hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tina. You know, Angie, one thing that she said, what stood out to me is she said that when it comes to race day, you have to let your body tell you what it's ready for.
Right.
I think that's pretty wise.
Definitely it is.
And I've heard you say on the podcast many, many times, listen to your body. In fact, this is like one of the most important rules when it comes to marathon training. And people say it so much that maybe, I don't know, it kind of becomes cliche after a while.
Right. I think maybe it seems kind of general and people don't really understand what that means.
So how does one get better at listening to one's body?
I think one thing is, as you start and continue your running journey, you start to really get to know your body better. You're obviously expecting more out of your body, and it is, for the most part, going to rise to the occasion. So you really get a new self-knowledge of your body through running, through physical fitness. And it's very important to be in tune with what your body is telling you. Little aches and pains may be, you know, fine, they may be normal, but if they continue, if you're having discomfort with a normal running stride, if it's causing you to change your running form, those are signs that something may be wrong. And it's very important to address them early and to get help, and either through self-treatment or through consulting a healthcare professional, so that you don't go down the road to injury.
I did 10 miles yesterday, and during the second half, I started feeling this tightness in my Achilles on the right side, and I've had issues with it. So I just had to start doing some walk breaks just so I can get back and not make matters worse. And now I got to, you know, be proactive with foam rolling and all that good stuff. But I think that might be an example for my life about listening to my body, even though it killed me to stop and walk because I needed to, you know, get the workout done and get back home. But it wasn't worth pushing through and making matters worse.
Exactly. And we all know that things like speed workouts or running hills, it's not going to be comfortable. You know, your body is going to be complaining. You may feel burning in your muscles, more shortness of breath, things like that. Those are more normal things associated with running. It's those abnormal things that we really have to pay attention to. And even if you're having extended fatigue, and just not feeling like yourself, it could be that you're overtraining, and it may require taking more rest days, doing lower impact cross training, and maybe getting more sleep and addressing the reason that you're just not feeling like yourself. So, you know, all those things shouldn't be ignored. Now, there are things that our mind is going to tell us that we should not listen to. You know, the mind is a tricky thing, and anytime you set a goal, a big goal, your mind is going to try to talk you out of it at times, and there's going to be that self-doubt that creeps in. And so that's the kind of thing that you don't want to let have free rein in your mind and rattle around constantly. You don't want to dwell on things that will erode your self-confidence.
Yeah.
So listen to your body. Sometimes listen to your mind. you know, you can acknowledge the thought. Maybe I don't feel like I have what it takes today, or I don't feel like a real runner, you know, whatever the thought is, acknowledge it, but then replace it with a positive truth and, you know, repeat a favorite mantra, focus on something that is going to be positive and helpful and help you move forward in your running journey.
Yeah, it was also interesting to hear Tina talk about the battle in her mind, which is out there running, and maybe someone passes her and it can be really demoralizing. And she has this mental chatter going on where she's sort of arguing with herself in her head. But it made me wonder, when Tina argues with herself, do the voices in her head have British accents?
That, yeah, it makes you wonder,
it's
huh?
It's a great mystery.
But it was a good point that she made that, you know, we know how we all struggle with the voices in our head and have to really fight against just negativity sometimes creeping in. But elite runners are the same way. They have those voices in their head as well, you know, possibly telling them that they're not good enough or that they shouldn't pursue their big goals. So it's good to know that, you know, as human beings, in a lot of ways, we're all the same.
Yeah, it is. We all, from time to time, have this voice say, who do you think you are? What makes you think that you are worthy of doing this? You know, and then if you're not an elite runner, then the voice comes in and says, you're not an elite runner. Look how slow you are. Who, you don't belong out here.
Well, we start comparing ourselves to other people, which is a dangerous type of thing because there's always going to be somebody faster or thinner or more efficient runner or a more prolific runner. there's always someone to compare ourselves to. But there's also a lot of reasons to celebrate your progress and to look back to see how far you've come and to pat yourself on the back and tell yourself that you do have what it takes and the road will not always be smooth and easy. Sometimes you'll have setbacks. That's just all part of the process.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening to the end. We appreciate all of you. Of course, head over to our website where you can get a free downloadable resource called the Runner's Toolbox, which will help you combat injuries. We'd also love to connect with you on Facebook. We've got about 12,000 likes and it's growing over there, so that's cool. And if you're not a subscriber to the podcast yet, be sure to subscribe so new episodes appear magically on your phone or in your iTunes account. We've got some great interviews ahead and some great topics we're going to be tackling. It's all about just empowering you to reach your running goals. And of course, if you want to go deeper into all things training, we have courses and resources in the Academy for those that are members. You can check that out when you go to marathontrainacademy.com. Well, until next time, folks, remember you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Run on my way.